Welcome to Surge's Faith, Work, and Rest podcast. Our goal is to help God's people discern their vocations and reimagine their occupations for the good of their neighbors and the glory of God.
Hey, this is Lauren Kutzko, and we are back for another episode of the Faith, Work, and Rest podcast put out by the Surge Network. I'm here with Jim Mullins and AC Olivatos.
Olivisatos.
I like your attempt. I like the fact that you went with it, you risked it, and you went for it.
No, this is really good stuff because we're talking about work today. And we had Andy Myers here not too long ago and have a great talk that he gives. And he's going to introduce himself a little bit. But he does some fascinating things in the world of employment. And one of the things that we talk a lot about at Surge and in the Faith, Work, and Rest Initiative is vocation. Because we have this discussion all the time about who am I? Who has God made me to be? What has God made me to do? How does my vocation fit into God's mission? And before we get into the talk, one of the things we were just going to talk about amongst ourselves is Jesus himself, when he was here, incarnate, becomes flesh, decides to do work, decides to be a carpenter. There's some debate about, you know, was that with wood? Was that with, you know, masonry back in the day? But the question is, if Jesus were to come now, this time, this place, what would he do for a living?
So it's interesting that in the interview with Andy, he says that Jesus would be an entrepreneur. And I think maybe, but if he was going to be an entrepreneur, it would definitely be a food truck that serves fish sandwiches, because he seems to have mastered the art of the fish sandwich. Some loaves of bread, some fish, he can go a long way with it. So I'm going to say run the food truck with the fish sandwiches. How about you, AC?
I think that Jesus, I think this is a two-part question or two-part answer. I think that if this is happening, this conversation is happening with Jesus in his 20s or as a teenager, he's going to be a professional athlete. And the reason I say that is because when it says that they went up to Jerusalem in the Bible, like that's literal. It's quite a trip to walk from Galilee to Jerusalem. And so his calves, his legs must have been ripped. His cardio was good. And then when it talks about him being a carpenter, we're talking to New Testament scholar Dean Fleming, and he was saying that the word in the Greek is actually builder, and there's not a lot of wood in Israel. So most likely when it talks about being a carpenter, he was building with stone. So I think he must have been yoked. Like he was ripped. He was in good shape. He didn't start his public ministry until his 30s. That's when professional athletes start to transition into a different career anyway. I think he would have been a pro athlete.
I think you're out of your mind. I think you're making Jesus in the image of LeBron James. But I'll offer another thing that he could have possibly done. I think it's called an ornithologist, the people who study birds, right? I think that's what it's called. Or a botanist, because he's always telling people to look at the birds, look at the plants, look at the flowers. And so, I mean, he's already doing that work in a sense when he's teaching us and giving us the Sermon on the Mount. So what do you think, Lauren? Do you think we're out of our minds here?
I do, but maybe not for the same reason that you do. But I don't have a great answer to this question from like an example, but this kind of thing just drives me crazy because most of the people that I talk to that are in their 20s that are trying to figure out what to do with their lives, that's the phrase, right? They have this idea that it's supposed to be the thing that they wake up on Monday morning and do. It's the thing that is supposed to provide the paycheck. It's supposed to provide the income. It's supposed to consume the majority of their time. But then we look, and I actually haven't gotten to this conversation much with my coaching clients about, well, Jesus, clearly his work, the mission that God sent him to earth for, was completely different than what he did Monday through Friday, so to speak, if the work week even existed then. But there is just this, it feels normal that his income source, the thing, like he just was like resolute. I have got to work. I'm going to have a job. That's not necessarily meaning that I'm not discipling the 12 disciples. It doesn't mean that I'm not doing the ministry that I'm called to do when I'm on earth. It's just a foregone conclusion. And I think right now, today's day and age, there's almost this frustrating thing that people believe it's all supposed to be integrated. But we don't see Jesus sit down and read what color is your parachute and to try to figure out, like, was he called to be a carpenter? He just was like, look, I'm going to build stuff.
I think that goes right to what we say as our mission, to help people reimagine their occupations and discern their vocations. There is a clear good work that God has created you for, and then there's the work that you must do, part of your responsibility, that needs to be reimagined in light of God's mission. And Andy, what he does is help people find work that it's a matter of having food on the table or not, paying rent or not, being able to have your kids live with you or not. And a lot of these folks aren't asking the question of what is the perfect thing that I was made to do. They're asking the question of what can I do right now to get a job? And therefore, when they're in that job, it's really important that they're able to see the day in, day out tasks as a part of God's story. So I think we're going to learn a lot from Andy as we interview him. Let's listen in and hear what he has to say. So Andy, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
My name is Andy Myers, and I am the Phoenix City Director for Flourish Now. Prior to this, I've been in pastoral ministry for 20 years, all of it in Arizona, and I'm also a father and a husband and four amazing kids. And so kind of a little bit about who I am is that, and what we do with Flourish Now is we work with faith communities in order to help people find work. The way that we've done that is to put on job fairs in local church communities, and I've just seen some amazing things happen through that.
Tell us about some of what those job fairs look like and what you've seen come out of that.
So when I first started this job, after being a pastor for so long, you know, when you're a pastor, you kind of think of how can we help people more, or how can we engage in their lives more? And typically you're finding that people you're entering into their crisis moments. The idea of the job fairs in a local church came out of the fact that part of the thing that people need most when they're hitting crisis usually stems from lack of employment. You can trace a lot of family issues back to that. And so we decided, hey, let's throw job fairs in churches. When I first started this job, it was kind of funny. I went to my first job fair, and it was at a hotel in downtown. It was very cold and distant. It was hard to get to. It was hard to navigate. And I thought, if I'm having this hard of time and I actually have a job, how hard would it be for somebody who doesn't have a job? So we decided that we're going to throw job parties. So we've gotten together with some amazing churches in the Phoenix area to host these one-day events where we bring in employers, we bring in community resource partners, we bring in the job seekers, and we just have a really good time together where people are finding jobs, eating food, sharing in community as they work and look for employment.
Of all the things that you could focus on to serve your neighbor, from housing to food to a whole plethora of things, why jobs? Why is that the significant starting place for you?
I think jobs is a significant place because we have all been in those places where maybe we didn't have one or didn't know what it looked like. Personally, I've had those moments where all of a sudden one ended and I didn't realize. And I look around to my family and my life and I go, what is going to happen now? Now, I've been very blessed to have some amazing church and friends around me that have been there for support and have been able to help me through those times. But I can't imagine what it would be like to not have a faith community around me during that time. So why jobs? Well, also, truthfully, not a lot of people know what goes on in our churches anymore. I mean, in Phoenix alone, 80% of people go nowhere. And so I feel like people sometimes drive by and go, what's happening in there? Well, now they're driving by some of these and going, jobs are happening in there. And so as we bring jobs in and employers that want to see people go back to work as well, and the volunteers from churches that are there to walk alongside people, we're seeing not just jobs happen, but hope. One story in particular is that we saw one time at a job fair. This lady came in, and one of our volunteers from the church went up to her and said, hey, you know, what are you looking for? We always like try to stay on the positive. Like, what are you good at? What do you like? She goes, I just need anything. And the volunteer said, anything? What do you mean? She goes, well, currently my kids are in DCS care, which means that they're in foster care. And maybe some things had happened in her life, but her kids were no longer with her at the moment. And part of her plan to work to get her kids back was to have a full-time job somewhere. And we didn't press into like what had she been doing before or prior, but she just needed to know right then she needed a job. So our volunteers started walking around with her, and they went up to one company, and the company started to talk with her, and they really liked her. And they said, you know, how about you come in next Tuesday? We'll interview you and you can probably start soon. And so she went away from that day just elated. I mean, she actually, not just elated, but she had tears running down her face because she was so happy that this was one step closer to being reunited as a family. So when somebody says, why do you do jobs? Like, I don't think about it just as a job. I think about it as this is a way for people's lives to come back together from maybe a very dark place that they were in. Maybe it's finding hope for that first time, or maybe it's just like this woman who this was what she needed in order to really move forward in her life.
So I think that's beautiful. My question for you would be, how do you go from standing in the middle of a church as the pastor of that church to standing in the middle of the church as the director of the job party that's happening in the middle of that church? How did God bring you into that place?
I would say sometimes it was through a series of unfortunate events. But we all end up in a place because God wants us there. I've been kind of uniquely wired to see things in churches where you're just like, I wonder what's going on there, or wanting to do more. I saw, like, as a pastor, I saw that I wanted to help more, but maybe how I was wired and my personality was I wasn't going to be at one church for very long. I'm kind of wired to get in and get out. I've spent a lot of time in interim ministry, and so my ministry has been in to go into a church that's hurting, maybe some things that they've had a very challenging past. And so I've been able to uniquely go in there and figure out quickly what's going on, help them get to a place of health and find their new pastor. And I'm totally cool with that. I love that. I saw this as an opportunity when it was presented to me to even affect the faith community more and to really bolster the local church. I firmly believe that God set the church as the hope of the world, not an organization, not a Flourish Now, not a YMCA, not anything else, but really the church. And so the more that we can come alongside and help churches grow and thrive, like, I see that as the win, that God has now utilized this neighborhood church to do more. Also, personality-wise, like, I love those pastors who just love their people to death and are going to be with them for the long haul. And people refer to them as their pastor that's just going to walk alongside them for as you know, that's going to, like, help with their kids and see their babies born and then walk with them through their life and eventually bury them. I'm not that guy. I love people. I love God's people, but maybe there's something wired in me. Maybe it was moving around a lot as a kid. Maybe it was just how God has uniquely wired me, but just I love the fact that I get to work in so many different churches now and interact with pastors. I also love the fact that when I'm sitting with pastors, sometimes we're talking about what we do with Flourish Now, but sometimes we're just talking about ministry and being able to have that 50,000 foot level and just hearing their stories and maybe even collaborating on some other things. I get so much life out of that with being able to help local churches thrive in their communities from just a different perspective.
So it sounds like you have a pretty good understanding of who you are, but how did that happen? How did that get cultivated? Did you ever have seasons of life where you didn't know who you were and you kind of tried to think of yourself as a different way? Maybe one of those pastors who would be at the same place for a long time. Yeah. How did you get to understand how God made you and the good works that he made you to do?
Now you're going deep, Jim. Mm. That's good though. I think it came through pain. I think there has been times in my life where I thought I was one thing and really tried hard. But it felt like, I remember I had a mentor and friend said, Andy, it seems like the harder you try, the more you're just spinning wheels and you're not gaining the ground that you need here locally. And that was painful because, you know, you kind of build your livelihood or you have this, have you ever seen those funny memes like, what I think I do, what my mom thinks I do, what the world thinks I do. I kind of resonated with that because I thought I was one thing. And I would go and go and go and just realize I'd butt my head up against the wall. And there were some maybe sharper edges to my personality where I know that I've been more directorial in roles than I needed to be, rather than building from collaboration. And so I think a few times getting knocked down by those and really understanding, okay, you know what? In some instances, like that works well. Like in being able to kind of bring a whole bunch of people together at one moment, that works really well. But in the long haul, in the day to day, like that can be grinding. Growing up, I was diagnosed with ADD and ADHD. And so learning that about myself, especially as an adult, has been interesting. My wife was even saying that, because sometimes, babe, you come home and you just want to talk. It's like a fire hose enters in, and not everybody can and should process that way. But I do. I process very fast. And so I think sometimes, and she's actually really helped me with this, like learning to read other people's rhythms and learning to read other people's, what they need from me at that moment has been very helpful, as God has taken what, you know, I mean, attention deficit disorder or whatever it's called, to becoming more of like, okay, that's how I'm wired. I can actually absorb lots of information and do things in a way that is very fast and rapidly, but also know that not everybody's rhythm is like that. And so I think that God has wired me uniquely in this role, because I can come into a church, I can bring this part of it, the fun, the intensity, this moment, and then also know that they don't have to live with me for very long, because you can't keep up sometimes. I can't keep up sometimes, but we can now just keep working from church to church, and just knowing that we can be in these moments to as like a catalyst, and to see some amazing things happen.
So I love what you said right there. I think that's a living illustration of how God uses our challenges, our pain, to mold us and to shape us into the good work that He intended for us. And I think that is so clear throughout Scripture. I mean, there are these long seasons of frustration in almost everybody's life. You have Joseph sitting around in jail, you know, Moses and Abraham and all these folks wandering around the desert, and those desert seasons. Even Paul, before he launches into his ministry in Arabia, there are these seasons of desert challenge, complexity. And so I think probably some of our listeners are in those seasons. What would you say are some of the questions they should be prayerfully asking and reflecting on right now?
I think some of the things that they should be prayerfully reflecting on and asking God is, have I put the right people around me that I'm listening to? I found in my life that I try to keep those people very close, and they get me. They call me out on stuff. They know me, and they still like me and keep influencing me. I would also say, take away your pride and ego and learn how you're really wired. Not how you want to be wired, not how you think you should be wired or what you're doing, but really how you are wired. I mean, there's some great things out there. I've been studying lately a lot about the Enneagram and learning how, you know, that's like the Myers-Briggs, but takes it to a different level, and learning how I actually respond in stress and how I respond when things are well and how I respond to others and how even my family and I interact. And I've learned so much about myself. So take some of your pride and ego about how you think you are and do that. I would also go back through, and sometimes we want to journal or write down all of our great accomplishments. I spent a little while ago writing through and thinking about some of the lowest points in my life and what I've learned from that. And then I started looking around in those lowest points and realizing who was with me, and even going back to them more. I mean, we always want to be the greatest person in the room. I think that's some of our North American psyche, that we want to be the best and the brightest. But we're at our lowest. Who is with us? And then really relying on them to carry us through these low points. And if you're sitting at some job that you feel is like a dead end or things like that, also know that there are options out there, and that you can explore things that you maybe you want to do or try. I think one of the coolest things about our economy and lifestyle right now is you can do things, you can do multiple things at once. You can be in something that's going to pay the bills and pay the rent and keep groceries on this while you explore other options, even through education. I mean, when has it there been a time where you could complete some degree that you want, whether it's in anthropology or a law degree or business practices, from, you know, your bed in jammy pants? You know, that's the reality that we live in. So take time to explore those things.
So you talked a little bit about mentors and those who influenced you. What if someone's seeking a mentor? What should they look for? How would someone go about finding a mentor?
That's a great question. I think it's one of those things that definitely you have to approach somebody that you admire and that is older than you. I think age brings a lot of wisdom to it. Maybe somebody that has gone through some similar life experiences that you have, maybe not exactly the same one because you don't want to mentor yourself, but maybe somebody that is a little bit different than you, that has gone through some same things. Somebody that will ask, and as you're approaching somebody, not somebody that will tell you everything to do, but ask you the right questions in order for you to kind of lead yourself to that response. Somebody that is godly in their wisdom, somebody that has experienced pain, and somebody that will just take the time not to have maybe a 20-minute coffee with you, but maybe 2 hours that they're willing to spend with you and set a time to make you a priority.
You talk a lot about jobs and employment. If you had to find a job for Jesus, if he showed up now instead of in the, you know, first century, where do you think he'd work? I mean, he was a carpenter back then. What tables, what booths do you think he would go to in your job fair?
I love that question. I would actually see Jesus being an entrepreneur that might have a job that started on that. I would see him actually being a Lyft driver, an Uber driver to start out with. Just to decode the people and the culture. Then I would see him branching out into an entrepreneurial fashion that would be like an amazing food truck. Again, something that's mobile, something that can pop up where the need arises, but this delicious food truck full of the best whatever, because he's Jesus, he could just make it, food that is out there.
I think a pretty strong case could be made that he would focus on fish sandwiches. I mean, the fish sandwich food truck, I think Jesus would kill it with that. So last question, speaking of mentors, if you could choose a couple of mentors from throughout history, who would you choose? People in the Bible excluded, but you can pick through the whole of history to have like a few people around you to give you advice on life.
I would pick Martin Luther King Jr. I'm going to shoot for the stars here because the grounding I've spent the last 2 or 3 years studying more of his life and reading beyond just what we read in pictures on MLK Day. But the influence that he had in his community and just the level of trust, even just as from a child, just what he learned. He was always growing, always learning, but the wisdom. I also love him because he was also hated. I mean, he was back in 1968, the most hated man in America, but that did not deter his mission. That did not deter him from what we see today, his legacy. And so if he were to, you know, if I could pick a mentor from history, that would be him. Because of his passion for justice and not leaving the mission just to appease whoever he needed to appease. Because truthfully, he could have been the best loved person. He could have been palatable to the white people in power, but he chose to stay on mission. And because of that, we see the effects of his influence just ripple, not throughout just America, but the world.
I'm going to have one more final question. I had one final question and then another final question, and this will be the final question. The final question would be, if there are people out there who are listening who play a role within hiring or job creation, what would you say to them? You're the guy who's the mediator between employers and employees. You have an open mic.
I would say keep an open mind on everybody. There are people in what would be considered blighted or marginalized communities or places that you wouldn't expect to find people to hire that are amazing. The employer market tends to gravitate towards maybe more suburbs, maybe places that are easier and more accessible. But we work a lot in the urban core in South Phoenix and places where we've been told by employers, like, I never expected this here. So I would say look for the unexpected. Go to the places where the stories are, and you'll be able to find amazing people who are educated and trained and brilliant and driven, but it may not look like the places where you expect that to come from, but they are there.
Well, thank you so much, Andy. We appreciate the work that you do, and most importantly, the person that you are. And so, we're glad that we get to work with you and appreciate you very much. Thanks, man.
So that was Andy Myers with Jim and talking about mentors. Jim, how do you find good mentors or advisors to help you navigate your calling?
Well, one of the best pieces of advice I've ever heard when it comes to mentors is to decide who your mentors are and then never tell them. Like, basically determine who they are and then just do whatever you can to be around them, get time with them. Because when you put the label of mentor on it, oftentimes it can create an awkward relationship. There's different expectations. Is it going to be this person is becoming a father to you, or are they going to come and just tell you, read a book with you? I mean, it's a loaded word. I just got back from Vancouver, and one of my mentors, whom I've never told is my mentor, is a guy named Steve Garber. He wrote a book called Visions of Vocation. And basically, I just try to make myself in the same place where he's at a lot of times and get a lot of coffee with him and ask him a lot of questions. And then I think we're at the point now where it's pretty clear that there's a status of mentor-mentee, but if I had sat down with him before and said, I want you to be my mentor, he might have been, hey, I'm a little weirded out. Who are you, kid? Versus just getting a bunch of cups of coffee and letting it organically develop. Last thing I'd say about that is that I think you need a couple different kinds of mentors. You need someone that's a lot like you, but a further ahead in life, that can somewhat be a template that you use to say, what am I going to grow into? And then also someone very differently than you, very different from you, who can ask the types of questions and think the types of things that you would never come up with on your own. How about you, Lauren? I know you've thought about this question. What would you say?
I love that. That's great to not talk about it, because I think I've experienced that awkwardness. You know, it's like as soon as you put a label on it, kind of something happens in the relationship that makes it maybe more challenging. So hopefully Steve doesn't listen to this podcast and find out that, you know, he's your secret mentor. I wasn't going to tell you guys, but you're my mentors. That's why I wanted to do this podcast, so I could be around you more. No, it's really good stuff. And I think we see scripture encouraging us to always bring wise counsel into different parts of our lives, especially big decisions. One thing I would say I've noticed, pay attention, not only are the people like me, like you, and then also have some people that are not like you, but pay attention to the kinds of ways that they're answering the questions that you ask. So do some of them tend to be negative? Do some of them tend to be positive? Because you can employ all of them, but make sure you've got both types of people in different decisions. One of the things that I found is when you're considering doing something new that's scary, a lot of people will say, maybe it's not such a good idea. And there's a risk that they're beginning to perceive a sense of negative impact on themselves if you do the thing that you asked them about and they said go for it and then it fails. And so they get scared about that. And so you got to be careful too that you're bringing lots of different voices into the mix, some that may be a little bit more risk tolerant. So that's really good stuff. And it's one of the reasons that here at the Faith, Work, and Rest Initiative, as part of Surge, we really wanted to start including some coaching. We realize it's not always easy to find people to talk to when you're going through a career transition, when you have different vocation questions. And so we are at the beginning of starting to pilot some different coaching. You can learn more about that at faithworkrest.com.
Imagine that Aleppo was vacation cool, and all the prison buildings were vocation schools. Imagine that we sip the finest water that exists, and it ain't from Poland Spring, nah, it's more like Poland Flint. Imagine politicians with the different views, all coming together every night, the news. Reports on the beauty of creation, not the mess. Get calls from IRS just to need to hire bless. The pain from autism all replaced by moral wisdom. The lame hit the dance floor, moving on rhythm. And no stores closed, no, we're cutting more ribbons. And all them strip clubs become museums just for women.